Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Make no mistake, a failure to act and act now will turn crisis into a catastrophe and guarantee a longer recession, a less robust recovery, and a more uncertain future.
I had the great good fortune to be alive and a lawyer in the late 1960s when, for the very first time in the history of this country, it became possible to urge before courts successfully that society would benefit enormously if women were regarded as people equal in stature to men.
Well, the last voice is that of the Marxist revolutionary on the U.S. Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I know with interest that Ms. Ginsburg, the most extremist Marxist revolutionary in the history of the Supreme Court, has gone in for cancer surgery as if on cue. We wish her a full and speedy recovery, of course, but wonder what might transpire should she seek her final reward at the big early bird in the sky. Would Obama appear at a funeral wearing a yarmulke? Or would he calculate that this might offend the Muslim world? Now, of course, he would have to appear at the funeral and would therefore necessarily wear the yarmulke, in which case Obama would need to attend the Muslim funeral almost immediately thereafter so as not to offend the all-important Muslim world. But it would have to be an important Muslim, not an ordinary unknown. Would the neo-Marxists go so far as to order an important Muslim to seek the 72 virgins immediately in order to permit the maximum leader to appear at his funeral in full Muslim garb? Only time will tell. This is Hans Christian Savage signing off. A little parody for you on the Savage Nation today. Because at a certain point, you have to enjoy these people. The country to a 97th percentile in Congress has been taken over by absolute gangsters. There are some great men out there. I saw them this morning. Kit Bond, for example, Republican senator from Missouri, tried to stand up to Pancetta Panetta. I mean, Leon Panetta is qualified to run a delicatessen in South San Francisco, but instead he's being confirmed with a rubber stamp by the Queen of Diamonds, Dianne Feinstein, which is shocking. I mean, I watched this. I can't believe what I'm watching. Here is a woman who came to power out of nowhere. She was made mayor after a mayor was assassinated in San Francisco. She became mayor, and then she clawed her way up into the Senate. This all the while her husband, Richard Blum, does business dealings with the government of China, which is not unusual unto itself, but to me is certainly worrisome, particularly since China is building up its military at such a rapid pace and does not see us as their necessary ally. I've never seen anything like this, such compromised people in such high places. And then there's Panetta himself. Leon Panetta, for CIA director, would be the equivalent of Louis Prima for the National Institutes of Health. That's about the closest fit I can come up with. If you took a musician and said to him, you're going to now be the head of the National Institutes of Health. And the musician said, but I know nothing about science. They say, but you're a counter-revolutionary. And unless you become the chairman of the NIH, we're going to put you in prison. This is the equivalent of Leon Panetta becoming the head of the CIA. It was a rubber stamp. And there was Feinstein interrupting everybody over and over again with her subterfuge, quiet Queen of Diamonds voice in a way that was eerie. It bordered on eerie. If this was just an amusement to me, it wouldn't bother me. But it's your country, stupid. the fear-mongering of Obama the Magnificent. Pass it now, or we may never recover. Pass the 90% of pork-laden bills that we put before you. Interestingly enough, CEOs appeared today on CNBC who said the exact opposite. For example, the CEO of a large corporation, James Bernard, went on CNBC and said, don't rush the stimulus through. Get it right. Listen to Mr. Bernard.
I believe all the economists are pretty much in unison that we need to do something. I know that one thing the president is getting is a lot of advice at this time. And it tends to me to think that, you know, if we walk a little slower, I kind of think that never has so much money been spent by so few. So we want to make sure we get it right. Whether we pass it this week or next week or the week after, I think is irrelevant. But I think we need to move forward. You know, whether we do it next week or a week after, I don't think that's really relevant.
Now, this is a real businessman as opposed to the community organizer, Obama the Magnificent, who has never run so much as a hot dog stand in Chicago. The man has never earned a nickel based upon his own business acumen. Think about it. We have a president who has never run a business. And here he is rushing through a pork barrel bill, telling us the sky will fall, while real businessmen are saying BS. Listen to Mr. Chidsey, the CEO of Burger King.
I actually think that, you know, taking a little bit of time here to make sure that the bill is as good as it can be and we eliminate, you know, those things that really don't stimulate the economy or provide jobs makes sense. And I really don't think they need to be rushing this through and, you know, today or tomorrow. To take a week and get it right is probably a good thing.
Yeah, so these are two businessmen. It's unbelievable to me. Now, here's Mitch McConnell, who is saying that $1 trillion, which is what Obama the Magnificent, the neo-Marxist, wants to spend. He says $1 trillion is $1 million for every day since Jesus' birth. Listen to clip 14.
If you started spending the day that Jesus was born and you spent $1 million every single day, you still wouldn't have spent $1 trillion.
Oh, God. This is great comedy. Unfortunately, it's not comedic. It's frightening to think that a group of Marxist revolutionaries have seized control of the reins of power in this country, and we haven't even seen the beginning of the end yet of what they're going to do to us. Not even the end of the beginning. We've seen nothing as to what they're going to do. Now, the CIA guy, Mr. Panchetta, who has no intelligence experience whatsoever, which makes him perfectly fit to be CIA director, because at least he paid his taxes. I think they were finally able to find somebody who paid his taxes, and they said, you're going to be CIA director. And he said, why should I be CIA director? I'm happy in Monterey. We have a nice institute here that my wife and I run. Well, it turns out that CIA nominee Leon Panchetta received $700,000 in speaking and consulting fees since the beginning of 2008. And some of that money came from troubled financial firms and from a firm that invests in contractors for federal national security agencies, which is part of what he's going to overlook. Mr. Panetta also received a $60,000 governmental advisor fee from the Pacific Maritime Association, which represents the shipping industry. He also received a $28,000 honorarium from the Carlyle Group, a private equity firm that owns companies doing business with national security agencies of the U.S. government. Oh, just look into this. It's just a scream. Is there an honest man in Washington? Yes. Kit Bond is one. There are about five of them in the Senate and about 10 of them in the House. Other than that, we have a soiled House of Representatives. Lincoln is crying. Washington is crying. Jefferson is crying. The entire nation is crying. The Statue of Liberty has been raped. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Focus for a minute on the U.S. Supreme Court, because it's the one thing Bush did that's somewhat hopeful that he saved the country the horror of a complete communist takeover of the nation. Way back when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was being confirmed in 1993, she wouldn't answer any questions. I have an article from 2005 that the National Review wrote on who she was, and I'm going to read it because it's very important you know who this woman is, because coming up very soon is going to be either her retirement or something, and they're going to try to foist another far-left radical onto the Supreme Court, and they will do so with Orrin Hatch, and Senator McCain around, believe me, they could put Karl Marx's wife on the Supreme Court, and these jerks would approve them, approve her. But I want to go back to 1993 when Clinton approved this radical from the ACLU, Ginsburg. She said that she won't answer any question. She said nothing about sexual orientation. She said no previews, no forecast, no hints. On issue after issue, Ginsburg applied this standard of not answering questions. And the idiot Republicans respected that line, and they appointed her 96-3. Okay? But if you look back on Ruth Bader Ginsburg's actual record, she was an extremist. She was on the far-left fringes of American society. And it is here in this article. The writer of this article from 05, I don't know who it is in the National Review, but I'm going to read it to you. It's up on michaelsavage.com in a moment. I have documented aspects of that record at length and in detail, but here it is. Here is Ginsburg's key background. One, protecting prostitution. Ginsburg had opined that several federal laws against prostitution are subject to several constitutional and policy objections. That's number one. I'll go down the list. Two, protecting bigamy. Ginsburg had opined that a law restricting the rights of bigamists is of questionable constitutionality since it appears to encroach impermissibly upon private relationships. So she was in favor of bigamy. Three, she wanted to abolish Mother's Day and Father's Day. Do you understand she's an absolute neo-Marxist? Abolishing Mother's Day and Father's Day. Ginsburg had stated replacing Mother's Day and Father's Day with a Parent Day should be considered as an observance more consistent with the policy of minimizing traditional sex-based differences in parental roles. So there it is. Four, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the radical, criticized the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Quote, the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, while ostensibly providing separate but equal benefits to both sexes, perpetuate stereotyped sex roles to the extent that they carry out congressionally mandated purposes, close quote, right out of communist China. Five, she urged co-ed prisons. This one may be my favorite, as it starkly illustrates how far removed Ginsburg was from the real world. Quote, sex-segregated adult or juvenile institutions are obviously separate and in a variety of ways unequal. If the grand design of such institutions is to prepare inmates for return to the community as persons equipped to benefit from and contribute to civil society, then perpetuation of single-sex institutions should be rejected. That's her. She wanted co-ed prisons. Now, here's the best one for this radical. Reducing the age of consent to 12 years of age. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who they're now parading forth as some sickly old woman, had recommended legislative changes that would reduce the age of consent for statutory rape under federal law from 16 to 12, requiring taxpayer funding for abortion, practicing limousine liberalism. Let's go down the list. It doesn't get any worse, so does it? Yes, it does. What I'm saying to you is quite important for you to understand. For years, during the reign of G.W. Bush, the liberal U.S. media continuously harped on the words neocon, 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 neocon. The neocons took us to war. The neocons took away our rights. The neocons had taken over the country. But more dangerous than the wildest liberal fantasy of neocons is the neo-Marxist liberal. Barack Obama is a case in point. You see, Marxists always try to build a stronger central government, to gather more power on a federal level, to make government bigger. They want to centralize, nationalize, and socialize. And that's why you've heard Democratic members of Congress talk about nationalizing the oil industry and ending talk radio. That's why you've heard Barack Obama talk about nationalizing the healthcare system. That's why Barack Obama is now telling U.S. companies how much they can pay their employees. A salary cap is the first step on the way to Soviet-style price controls. This is something that Karl Marx would have dearly loved to see. You see, Karl Marx was the founder of the Communist Party. He wanted to hand the means of production, the manufacturing base of the country, over to what he called the proletariat, or the working people. But people turned out to be a euphemism for the central government. And Marx's ideas ended in the deaths of 100 million people throughout the 20th century. What will the end of neo-Marxist liberalism be? We don't know. But we do know this. With Barack Obama having issued more executive orders in his first 2 weeks than any other president in recent history, and with Nancy Mussolini Pelosi screaming that the federal government needs the power to stimulate the economy, it looks like the neo-Marxist liberals are about to get their way. GW may have started the process of socializing America and its economy. But Barack Obama has bigger plans than GW and his neocons could ever have imagined. We could use a few neocons these days, at least the ones who haven't already signed on to Obama's new Marxism. So that's the neo-Marxist reign that we're living through right now. You better get it straight. You've heard the phrase neocons, neocons, neocons. Well, start using neo-Marxist, neo-Marxist, neo-Marxist. That's what defines Obama. I knew a guy I went to college with who lives not too far from me. I stopped talking to him years ago because he's a lowlife of a lawyer. Not all lawyers are. This one is of the lowest variety, in my opinion. His father was a crook of the lowest order. And this one is a big Democrat who acts very quiet, and he talks quietly, you know, in the liberal way, never raises his voice. He's the type that if you let him stay in your house while you're on vacation, he would burn your pots and then hide the pots somewhere so you'd find them a month later. That's the type I'm talking about. To make a long story short, he will not argue with you about Obama. He's afraid to face you about Obama. He just walks in goose step as a true Obama maniac. He's incapable of arguing about Obama. He's incapable of supporting Obama's neo-Marxist policies. He can't look you in the eye and have a reasonable argument or discussion. And this is a man with a law degree. And this man typifies the spinelessness of the neo-Marxists in America today. This is the Savage Nation, and I approve of my own monologues. If you'd like to call me, well, call me at 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is not fair game. Let's start in... Oh, I don't know. Where shall I start today? Where do you want me to start? What part of America shall I throw a dart into? When I come back, we're going to start somewhere in America. It may be Maine, New York, Florida. Do I have a Florida? Hey, do I have a Florida? Do I have a Texas? Let me have a Texas. Let me have a Louisiana. Do I have a California? Do I have a Los Angeles? Do I have a Seattle? Do I have a Portland? Do I have a Chicago? It's an amazing thing to have this freedom, and I try not to abuse it. But mark my words, you're going to have to fight with your whole life very soon when these neo-Marxists try to destroy talk radio because we are the last bulwark in their desire to induce total and absolute tyranny over the American mind. All they want you to do is look up sluts' skirts on the websites and get stoned and drunk as often as possible.
Savage.
Working in the trenches all day, this is the Savage Nation. Neo-Marxism is a phrase you must start to use in your daily conversations with people, particularly the brainwashed cowards who will not defend Obama, who don't even understand who he is or what he's doing. Use the phrase quietly. Say he's a neo-Marxist, just as they threw the word neocon around for 8 years, somehow empowering them. They thought it gave them a power. Neocon, neocon, neocon. It kind of took on a life of its own. The word neo-Marxist is not just a syllogism, it's an actual phrase that means something. By all definition, Obama is already a neo-Marxist. By all definition, most of the Democrats who are on the far left of the spectrum are neo-Marxists. And I have said this to you for years, not days, years. Years I've said it to you. There is no conservative Republican Party in America. I called them Demokins and Republicrats in 1994 when I started in radio. 1994, I saw the merging of the two parties. But what's happened now is the sleight of hand is such, we have been pushed so far to the left, that the Republicans, who are today the liberal Democrat Party of the day, and to the left of them is the neo-Marxist party of the Democrat Party. There is no Republican Party. There is no Republican Party that stands for borders, language, and culture, a so-called conservative party. If there was, there'd be a real debate going on in this country right now instead of some kind of whining holding operation. We are being pushed so far to the left so fast we don't even know where the center is. You understand this? I do. I'm lucky I'm here to help you with it. You think I want to do this every day? I would rather have stayed in bed today. Today was a day I didn't even want to get out of bed. I am telling you that every day I wake up, I feel like another body blow is coming from this neo-Marxist fraud, Obama and his minions. And it does. Literally every day, I wince when I see this man, what this man does. It's that bad. This is not for effect. This guy is a revolutionary by any definition whatsoever. In 2 short weeks, he's passed more executive orders than any president in American history. That unto itself would be considered revolutionary. Now he's trying to pass a $1 trillion pork barrel bill under the guise of a job creation bill when top CEOs, not those receiving bailouts, are saying, whoa, slow down, not so fast. Get it right. Cut out the pork. And the American people are catching on. Support for the stimulus package falls to 37%. Somehow the internet and talk radio is working. Scott Rasmussen is not really to the left or to the right, so far as I know. He's kind of right down the middle. Support for the economic recovery plan has fallen again this week. For the first time, a plurality of voters opposed the $900 billion plus plan. The latest Rasmussen reports, National Telephone Survey found that 37% favor, 43% opposed, 20% are not sure. 2 weeks ago, 45% supported the plan. And Obama knows this. Obama knows that the longer the American people look at this pork-laden bill, the lower the chances are of shoving it down our throats. And yet, it's being railroaded down our throats. Sure, everybody wants the government to do something. Everybody wants something. But what's the rush? Tell me what the rush is. They bailed out the banks, didn't they? Paulson, the Marxist, the centralized government Paulson, who took our government and literally put the treasury in the hands of Goldman Sachs. I was the first to see that. Don't you remember I did a Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of Goldman Sachs of America. Do you remember that? I've always been ahead of the curve. When you're slightly ahead of your time, you're ahead of your time. I know what he did. I know that Paulson, in my opinion, was the greatest thief in the history of the world. He makes Bernie Madoff look like an Eagle Scout, what he did to this country. He took his old company, Goldman Sachs, and literally almost transferred the entire treasury into a piggy bank for Goldman Sachs and the cronies on Wall Street. Where is Paulson today? What is he doing today? Why, he probably went back to Goldman Sachs. He's just an ordinary citizen, just as you are. Okay? Yeah, went back to his old company. And there it is, the transfer of the U.S. Treasury to Goldman Sachs occurred under George Bush's watch. So here we are, and I did the pledge. Believe me, I did the pledge. Let's take the callers here on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Sean, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I want to say thank you for calling us. More striking than the truth you're telling on your program are the things I've heard Obama say. It's bone-chilling. And if the man's not...
I don't understand how the media lets him get away with it, but then, of course, I do understand how the media lets him get away with it because they're fellow travelers. The midstream media are fellow travelers. They have greased the skids for this Marxist takeover of America. They don't care if they lose their jobs. They don't care. They think it's for the greater good of the universe that they're out of work doesn't matter to them. They figure that when they lose their jobs and the newspapers go bust, oh, they'll get some kind of government support under the new socialist regime. They'll get some kind of benefit in some way. You read today that News Corporation lost $6.4 billion in the last quarter. That's the home of the leprechaun. Think about it. That's the home of the leprechaun and the wall banger. The leprechaun and the wall banger's home lost $6.4 billion in the last quarter. Think about that. Then you look down, you can't believe what's going on in this country. McClatchy reports loss on newspapers. McClatchy. Sun Times Media Group, CEO resigns. Time Magazine cover, save the newspapers. Time Magazine. Now, you wonder why newspapers and magazines are going bust. They keep saying ad revenue. Well, that's true to a certain extent. But it's the fact that the journalism itself, the product itself, has been so out of touch with the audience for their publication that the audience walked away from it. You want me to call it like it is? Let me ask you something. If you analyzed who buys newspapers in America today on a racial basis, wouldn't you say that it's largely white people? Would you say, let's start from the bottom and work our way up. Do illegal aliens buy American newspapers? Very small percentage. yet the newspapers continuously report on the strife and the plight of the illegal alien, the racist nature of America, which, of course, is a fiction. If you analyze the racial makeup of the newspaper buyer, my guess is, and I haven't done a study, it's largely white people. Did you hear me? And they're largely older people. And the majority of older people who are white happen to be somewhat conservative. So if you're going to pick up a paper every day that puts out anti-white, anti-family, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, news, biased news stories, you're going to stop buying it, right? You're never going to read that and see that. That's the reason. It's the bias, because they're writing it. Case in point. I'm going on to the Time Magazine website right now, partners with CNN. And I'm looking at the most popular, most read articles in this far-left, useless publication. Number one, 25 Things I Didn't Want to Know About You. Two, a 10-year-old divorcee takes Paris. Three, Obama versus Pelosi. Can the president work with the Democrats? Four, Ron Jeremy, My Life as a Porn Star. Five, How to Save Your Newspaper. These are the most read articles on Time Magazine's website, according to what I'm reading to you right now. They're irrelevant. They're gone. They're finished. Who wants to read this thing anymore? It's a buggy whip. It's a buggy whip. Headline, Obama shifts message in stimulus fight. That's their headline. You hear? They haven't caught on to the fact that the people themselves have moved away from the so-called stimulus. Puerto Rico man confesses tourist slate. Pregnant American tourist jogging in Puerto Rico, kidnapped and stabbed to death in Puerto Rico. Vaya con Dios. Vaya con Dios. How to Save Your Newspaper. Ruth Bader Ginsburg treated for cancer without any discussion of her Marxist policies from before she became a Supreme Court justice. Just a nice old lady with pancreatic cancer. Well, I lost a brother-in-law to pancreatic cancer last week, so kindly don't lecture me to be too sensitive here, okay? I mean, it's a terrible disease, but we have to look at their policies. They're public figures, just as Kennedy, when he had brain cancer, was not suddenly divorced from his past, was he? We're not supposed to remember what he did to this country. We weren't supposed to remember the girl he left drowning in Chappaquiddick. That was supposed to be forgotten because he got brain cancer? No, not by me. 1-800-449-8255. Gay marriage leaders file for divorce. Interesting, yeah. The same people who pushed to get married in Massachusetts got divorced. Oh, the great one is stepping off Air Force One. Way, oh, hail King Obama! He has taken his first joyride. There he is, all hail Obama! He's stepping down off the plane. A historic moment. The first black president rides Air Force One. All hail Obama! America must come to a halt. All cars, come to a halt. All businesses, a moment of silence. It's President, the Supreme Commander, the magnificent Obama, has taken his first trip on Air Force One. As you know, Bill Clinton took many trips on Air Force One. Many, many trips on Air Force One. Not all of them were flights. They were trips. Quite a trip, I hear. So here he is. He's about to step off. You're about to witness history in the making. He's taken his first trip on Air Force One. Here comes Obama the Magnificent, every moment in his life. The first time he's used the royal toilet, you must cease operations across America. Obama flushes White House toilet for the first time. Everyone come to a halt. It's history in the making. Take a picture of it. Obama uses kitchen in the White House first time. Stop your doings. Stop your work. Take the pictures. There's Obama having a popsicle in the White House kitchen. There's no end to the silliness of the idiots in the media. Just no end to this worship. No end to this worship. This Obama worship is something on the order of insanity. It's total and absolute insanity. I haven't any idea what they're worshiping or why. They haven't seen who he is yet? They're still going along with the program that was put into their head? Austin, Texas, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I just would like to know, when is it that we can call tyranny tyranny?
Let's call it neo-Marxism. That works for me, my friend. Doesn't it work for you?
It works for me, let me tell you. And I've got to say that 2 months ago, listening to you, everything you're talking about now, you were talking about 2 months ago. You are so right on cue. It is absolutely amazing. So I have to change your name to Einstein because that's who you are. You are.
I do appreciate compliments. They're so few and far between. But I'd rather be wrong about Obama than right. But I'm telling you, you've seen nothing yet. If this man has the audacity to push through 5 executive orders in a week, to try to jam through a $1 trillion pork barrel laden bill in the second or third week of his presidency without any debate permitted, because otherwise the world will collapse, he says, the sky will fall. What will be in a year, 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years, my friend? Can you project forward on a geometric scale? And I will tell you that if he is not stopped, if there's no opposition to him at every step of the way, we will be living in Cuba in our lifetime in much shorter period of time than you may think. I never really wanted to play dominoes and drive a 1953 Buick, personally. That's a joke. Actually, I wouldn't mind to drive a 53 Buick if I can get my hands on a clean one. I have the 65 Caddy. I don't even use it anymore. I put it in the garage. I haven't driven it since the summer. I'm tired of all these toys. I don't have the time for it anymore. I don't have the mindset. I should just auction it off. You know what I mean? N'importe où dehors du monde. Where can I move? Anywhere out of this world. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So Obama the Magnificent has taken his first plane ride in Air Force One. You may now go back to work now that the new emperor has been seen coming down the runway in a long overcoat. You can suddenly go back to work. So the pork barrel bill has grown by $100 billion in the Senate. And Harry Reid, who said that there would be a new air in Washington, has said they're going to pass it without Republican backing. Let the Republicans be damned. Moderate Democrats and Republicans are saying cut the bill by 50 to 100 billion. Take it from 900 to 850 or 8. And Reid says, no, we want 900 billion. And we're going to pass it no matter what they do. Do you know how much money this is? As Mitch McConnell said, if you spent $1 million a day from the day Jesus was born, that's $1 trillion. This is unbelievable. How could this be? How could this be going on when you were promised change? Answer, liberalism is a mental disorder. People who are diehard liberals and will not argue with you or even listen to the facts are mentally deranged. By definition, the years of marijuana rotted their neurons. Did you see that story about the lost path of the most wanted Nazi? Nazi. You know where he was? He was living as a Muslim in Cairo, Egypt. Arbaret Ferdinand Chaim was walking in the busy streets of Egypt's capital to the renowned Al-Azhar Mosque, where he converted to Islam. Shocking to think that a Nazi would become a Muslim. How is that possible? That a Nazi would become a practitioner of the religion of peace? Well, I guess you'd have to know something of history and the Grand Mufti to understand that they're actually kissing cousins. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com. Is it too late? Maybe I should just do some, you know, lifestyle stuff. You know? Maybe I should just stop the politics already for a while. What's the point? Is there any point to me talking about politics just because I'm right? Does it matter that I'm right when we live in a world of might? Does might matter in a world of right? Does right matter in a world of might? Does my being right stop those with might? Of course not. You take a look at them and you know that we're living in a tyranny already. I can call it neo-Marxism. The last caller said, when do we call it tyranny? Call it whatever you want. When you have a Democrat Party that will not even listen to the opposition party after lying and saying that they wanted a new era, a new this, new that, what does that tell you? It tells you you have a gang, a Democrat socialist gang, screwing America. You see the leaders of major corporations saying, not so fast, slow down, get it right, don't spend so much. And you see the gangsters. The gangsters in the Democrat Party are basically going to railroad a $1 trillion bill through without even understanding where the money is going. $1 million a day since Jesus' birth would make $1 trillion. And today we see this rubbish of Obama speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast. Yeah, in the early days of another dictator in Germany in the 1930s, he also went to church. Yeah. Oh, let's hear clip 15, because here's Obama on faith.
Jesus told us to love thy neighbor as thyself. The Torah commands, that which is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow. In Islam, there is the hadith that reads, none of you truly believes until he wishes for his brother what he wishes for himself.
Duh.
The same is true for Buddhists and Hindus.
Why are they applauding on the Muslim thing? Well, what's that? Where was this given? In Cairo? No. This wasn't given in Cairo. This was given in Washington. But the one little hint of something Muslim already, they went on their hands and knees. I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm getting sick of this pandering to the Muslims. I'm getting sick of the pandering to Islam. It is not the founding religion of America. The founding religion of America is Christianity, built on Jewish principles, not on Islamic principles. In an age of terror in particular, it's very important that we understand that while not all Muslims are terrorists, virtually all terrorists are Muslims. Who wrote that first? Not me. A Muslim who knows the truth wrote that about 2 years ago. And so you're being brainwashed on a daily basis now. Oh, I believe in love one another, treat with dignity those whom we spend a brief moment on this earth. We know all of that rubbish. I grew up on it. Go tell that to somebody in the street who has it out for you. Go tell that to the thugs in the street. Go tell that to the Islamo-fascists. Yeah, okay, I understand all the malarkey. I know what they have to do. It means nothing. It's hot air, as my father would say. Nothing but hot air and malarkey. I grew up listening to a father who was very cynical and taught me the world as it is, not the world as I was told it was in grade school. But if you want to live in a grade school world, go ahead. You want to live in that world, that stupid world of coloring books, go ahead. But you're going to listen to the plain truth on this show.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. So as Mitch McConnell said, if what's $1 trillion that Obama the Magnificent wants to spend? If you spent $1 million a day from the day Jesus was born until now, that's $1 trillion. Do you have any idea what kind of egomania you're looking at here? What kind of narcissism, what kind of detachment from reality you're looking at? Here's a guy who never ran a business. Obama never ran a business. Advanced simply on his rhetoric. And affirmative action, say it like it is. I'm not going to mince words. Let me ask you this. If he was 100% white, would he be president today? Answer that question honestly, and you'll know what I'm talking about. You know I'm right. It doesn't matter whether you like what I'm saying. What matters is whether you know I'm right or wrong. You know I'm right. Okay, so he used race to get where he is. That doesn't make him a genius, you know. Okay? No business experience whatsoever, but he wants $1 trillion of your money to throw down the toilet bowl. Now, of course, this is appealing to the losers out there. Listen to what the Bible says in Proverbs. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be abundantly gratified. I'll read that again. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. That's the average kind of downtrodden person in America, the sluggard. Let's say a life that was devoted to drugs or rock and roll or sex or alcohol or tied up in mental problems. Fundamentally, they're the sluggards of America. They're the born Democrat. They are the born voter for socialism. They desire and they have nothing. So the corrupt politician, the neo-Marxists, keep promising them the world. They're still going to have nothing. Particularly if you drive away those of us who produce from producing, those of us who have businesses and create jobs and buy factories and employ people, if you disincentivize us, meaning higher taxes, more regulation, if you keep doing it, we close the factories, we leave the country, we go out of business, jobs are lost, and you wind up with one salami hanging in a butcher shop like in Eastern Europe in the 1950s. That's how that worked. That's why it happened. In other words, why were our delis full of salamis and bolognese and turkeys and whatever? And you would see in the 50s in the newspapers what it was like in Eastern Europe, Poland, one sausage hanging from the butcher shop and a line around the block. Why? Why was there not more than one sausage? Because their economic system did not reward work. It did not reward investment. It was the opposite. So nobody worked and nobody invested. So now you have neo-Marxists under Obama trying to impose on a minor scale, the same mentality. In other words, we'll tax you to pay for our stimulus, and that's going to save the world. It won't save the world. It's not going to save anything. It's pork barrel spending by any definition. The way of a fool is straight in his own eyes, but he that is wise hearkeneth unto counsel. I don't know what that means. Never a lot of this I can't understand. They spoke in code. It's easy to write this stuff and sound smart, like in the old days, sitting around under an olive tree, walking around old Jerusalem. You know, there shall be no mischief befall the righteous, but the wicked are filled with evil. All right, take a walk. Throw them out of the cafe. Troublemaker looking for free coffee. A wise son is instructed of his father, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. Get out. Take a walk, you old bum. You know, how much can you believe? You think I believe in all of this, every word of it? How can you? Basically written by old men under olive trees looking to make a buck. They were the journalists of that time. Proverbs were written by unemployed journalists. There were no newspapers then, so they walk around writing Proverbs. You know what I'm saying? They figured to someone, ooh, look what he said, a rebellious man seeketh only evil. Therefore a cruel messenger shall be sent against him. All right, let's hear a little bit more. Here's a shekel. Speak more. Speak, sage. Tell us more Proverbs. Whoso rewardeth evil for good, evil shall not depart from his house. Whoa, here's another shekel. Hey, man, look at this guy. Come around this guy. He's good. He's on a roll. Throw him a couple of shekels there. You want a lox? What do you want? A fish? All right, let's hear another one. A merry heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Whoa, throw him the shekels. Today they'd be working for Gannett newspapers. Even one that is slack in his work is brother to him that is a destroyer. Oh, I have no idea what that means. I could understand. If I wanted to bend my mind around it, what does it mean? You know, I'm going to break it down for you from my point of view. You know, let me put away the book. Let me put away the news. Let me turn off the computer. Let's put aside all the news of the day. I've expressed exactly what I feel about Obama and his minions. I've told it to you, neo-Marxism. I tell you my fears that we'll be living in a Cuba-like society within a few years if this man's trajectory is not stopped. In other words, if you let this man win at every turn, this radical professor, this radical street organizer, this Saul Alinsky clone, if you let this man win at every turn within 3 weeks, where would you be in 3 years? Think Castro's Cuba. All of your freedom of speech will be gone. All of your freedom of expression will be gone. You'll be arrested. People will be spying on each other in this country under the guise of peace and love and compassion. That's my deepest fear, is that this man has to be stopped. No man should be a dictator. I don't care whether he's a conservative or a liberal. No president should have absolute power. And you're now living where Big Brother wants to dictate every aspect of your life. Yesterday, Obama had the nerve to pass a child health bill that the Democrats rewrote to include illegal alien children, meaning illegal alien children are now going to get a gold-plated health care system, courtesy of you, the moron taxpayer. He got away with it. There was no talk of it in the newspapers. The so-called prophets of our time, the low-life journalists who are cousins to the low-life politicians on the left, did not even let you know that you were just screwed by another Marxist bill. Where is the money going to come from? Doesn't matter. As long as the children have health care, even if they're illegal aliens, doesn't matter whether they have the money for it. So as I say, if you don't stop this man, you're going to have a total dictatorship in this country. And we know what the model is. The model is Cuba. That's the model. You don't have to look any further. You don't have to go any more extreme than that. The opposition to Castro disappeared long ago. They were either exiled, self-exiled, left the island, or they were executed, or they were imprisoned for up to 30-some-odd years. Don't say it can't happen here. It will happen here, unless this dictator is shown that he is not a dictator, but he is the president of a republic of the United States of America. Do you understand this? Now, what are the signs of what this man might do if his grandiose schemes are not inhibited? I think that was well put. If his grandiose schemes are not inhibited, what might he do? Well, how about the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms? We know that all dictators do not want an armed populace. Not that that means very much anymore, because with the advent of the tax squad and the power of the police, what are you going to do with a gun? Are you going to defend yourself? You'll defend nothing. Look what they did to the poor Randy Weaver at Ruby Ridge. They killed his wife and son, and not one of those criminals in the ATF or the FBI went to jail. They shot Randy Weaver's son in the back with a scoped rifle. That's your government at work. That was under Bill Clinton. They killed Mrs. Weaver. They shot her. I watched the hearings, and I knew that America died that day. When I saw the most evil woman in the history of American politics, Dianne Feinstein, conduct the Soviet show trial of the trials surrounding the deaths of Randy Weaver's wife and son. They put up a curtain to protect the identity of the murderers, the ATF and FBI agents, who shot Randy's wife and son. And Dianne Feinstein sat there like the Chinese that she appears to imitate, like the Chinese Mandarin she appears to imitate. And I remember to this day how she spoke. "Tell us how it happened, Agent X." "So the calico curtain was blowing in the wind and you could not see clearly when you pulled the trigger, correct?" "Yeah, Diane." "Diane, if there is a heaven and if there is the other place, I am sure there's a place waiting for you in the other place. That's all I can say. Because we know that you're so powerful right now as chairman of the Senate Armed Intelligence. It's impossible for me to believe that this hack, this harridan, is now the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. I've never seen anything like this. Women who have never fired a Daisy BB gun are now in charge of where our troops go. Women who have never fired a Daisy BB gun now read the most intimate intelligence reports and decide what shall and shall not be acted upon. They put our boys in danger, in harm's way. That's where the country is today. So looking ahead, the prognosis to Dr. Savage, for the Dr. Savage, my prognosis for America is very poor. I am sorry to tell you this. I won't say I'm depressed any more than a cancer surgeon would be depressed if he opened up a patient and he saw that the disease had metastasized almost to the point of an irreparable cancer. I do not know what can be used to save this patient. I do not. And for me to say to you there's hope, I would be lying to you. And I'm not going to lie to you, because the day I start lying to you about politics is the day I'll resign. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Last segment, I concluded by talking about Dianne Feinstein, the Queen of Diamonds, overseeing the hearings and the shootings of Randy Weaver's wife and son by the ATF and FBI. Now, I mistakenly said that it was under Clinton, it was under Bush, but that wasn't the point. The critical point was that the murderers, the assassins in the FBI and the ATF were never punished for assassinating an American citizen who was set up by the government. So don't tell me if you have your gun, you're going to stand up to the government. Please, it's a moot point. You can play with the gun all you want. It's worthless. With attack squads today and the way the police are trained, what are you going to do? You're going to have a shootout in your house. So the Second Amendment. But what else might Obama do? He doesn't have to seize your guns. What are you going to do, rise up? Don't be stupid. He let the schmuck have his gun. What are you going to do with it? Nothing. No, there are many other fundamentals that will be taken from you before your guns. You can sit with your guns from today till kingdom come, and you'll still be a prisoner and a slave under the neo-Marxists underneath Obama. If thou lend money to any of my people, even to the poor with thee, thou shalt not be to him as a creditor, neither shall ye lay upon him interest. In other words, usury was prohibited in the old world, in the Old Testament. And the Muslims got that right, and they don't permit usury either. They're 100% biblically correct in that regard. Many of the writings in the Quran come directly from the Old Testament. That's well established. But they got this no interest usury. So look at the bankers today. Take a look at this. The country's run by the usurers. Think about it. The country is run by usurers. It's unbelievable to me. So you wonder why? When did it start? What do I know when it started? Here we are. Is the question is how much evil can you live with, and how much corruption can you live with, and how bad can it get? It's anyone's guess. They have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it. We know all about that. So what value does the Bible have in today's world? More value or less value? In these troubling times, does the Bible have more power for you or less power? You rely upon it more or less in these troubled times? Do you turn to the Bible and look for your answers? Are there answers in the Bible? Thou shalt not see the kid in its mother's milk. What does all this mean? What meaning does this have? How can it help you? Where's the power in God's word, if this is God's word, if you're not an atheist or a total skeptic? What value does this meaningless old book have? Why do so many millions of people cling to it, this rock of ages? Why do they go each week to the church? Why do they go each week to the synagogue? Why do they pray? Why do they put on their vestments? Why do they speak to God each week or some several times a day in their houses of worship? Well, I suppose they receive a sense of universality and eternity, and so they can tolerate the present by living in the eternal. I suppose that's the only answer I could come up with. In other words, if you can get out of the present and move into the eternal in some manner through your religion, it gives you a sense of peace. To understand that evil has always been in mankind's lot. It always has been and always will be. And so, therefore, I guess it's a way to rise above it all, I suppose. I suppose I should be more religious and more worshipful. Suppose I should be a better attender in the house of prayer, but I don't. I don't attend the house of prayer. I've become somewhat of a cynic in the last few months. Maybe that's why I'm not feeling that good. Maybe I have to go back to this. Maybe that's what's missing in my life. A few years ago, I was much more of a believer than I am now. I can't say why. I mean, I don't really believe in it much anymore. And I don't know. I got cynical about it all. Money started to get to me. The violence surrounding religion got to me. I said, a pox upon all of them. That's what happened. I swear to God, with all the murder surrounding religion, killing over religion, my God, your God, I kill you and your children. I couldn't take it anymore. So I started to get, you know, jaded and cynical. I don't like being here. I would rather have a child's view of the world. I'd rather believe in Mickey Mouse. I'd rather have a coloring book in my head. You know, there's God up there, my mother's cooking for God. Yeah, you know, I'd rather believe. But who can believe that every day? You look around, you see the children with cancer. You see the best people on earth dying. And some of the most evil vermin rising to new heights of power. You see some of the most unqualified evil people in the world rising to heights you can't imagine, and to positions of power and authority that is unrecognizable. And you say, where's God? And this is nothing compared to what people are living through and have lived through. And this is nothing. This is baby stuff what we're watching here. The baby steps of Marxism. Baby steps of Marxism. Goo, goo, wah, wah. The Marxist baby is crawling through America. This is only the infancy. The Marx baby is in its diapers. The baby of Marxism is only in its diapers. It has not yet learned to walk. It's still crawling. And look where we are today, I say to myself. And yet even in the Soviet Union, the ex-Soviet Union, there were people who believed. They were put into the Gulag Archipelago for going to church. They had to pray on the ground. The Christians had to pray on the ground. The Jews had to pray on the ground because the state was the only religion that was permitted.
Savage.
Look at all the real threats this country has. Iran launches a rocket last week, and it's on the road to developing a nuclear weapon. China, not our friend. The Soviet Union moving battleships into South America. Wherever you turn, this country is being encircled, and these neo-Marxists are just trying to do business as usual, pork barrel spending, just send money back to the district, and their heads are in the sand, and we the people are going to pay for it. You know what I'm saying? We're the ones sitting here, strung out, watching these idiots doing this. It's absurdity, just enriching themselves and their cronies. That's what's getting us so agitated. We know it has nothing to do with the meltdown of the economy. Can anyone explain to me, I'm a reasonably intelligent guy, I suppose, how spending trillions of dollars is going to save the economy from a depression? I don't get that part of it. I can't follow that logic. Because in the years that I didn't do well, I certainly didn't go and borrow to spend more money. I spent less. And then eventually when I got more income and pulled myself out of the hole, times got better for myself and my family. I didn't borrow myself out of and borrow and spend out of my decline. I mean, I don't get it. How does a country work different than a person? Can anyone explain that to me? Because the USA must spend trillions to avoid entering a depression, says the chief of General Electric. The guy's getting a bailout from the government. I'm going to believe a word he says? The General Electric chief, GE chief, has a division called GE Capital. Jeff Immelt said that we must spend trillions to avoid a depression. But if you saw an article I had on the website last week, CNBC was fronting for him because they're one of the divisions of General Electric. They own it. And they're getting a huge piece, a huge chunk of this bailout pie goes directly into GE's pocket. So we're supposed to believe this guy, Jeff Immelt, is getting money from the people? This is unbelievable to me, the kind of propaganda day and night. And the media doesn't even tell you who's who and what's what and where the connections are. What do you mean we must spend? It's going right in his pockets. It can still fly around in his plane. These guys busted their companies out. Now they want you to pay for it. I don't understand how spending trillions of dollars will save us from entering a mini depression. I think they're all full of crap. And I think that the guys who I played for you earlier know more than they do. Give me some CEOs whose companies are doing well and listen to what they have to say. Listen to clip 10.
The economists are pretty much in unison that we need to do something. I know that one thing the president is getting is a lot of advice at this time. And it tends to me to think that, you know, if we walk a little slower, I kind of think that never has so much money been spent by so few. So we want to make sure we get it right. Whether we pass it this week or next week or the week after, I think is irrelevant. But I think we need to move forward. You know, whether we do it next week or a week after, I don't think that's really relevant.
Now, this is a successful corporate executive, James Bernard, CEO of Shaw Group, thousands of employees and profitable, as opposed to the basket case who runs General Electric, who's saying we must spend it now to avoid a mini depression, and no disclosure that he's getting some of the bailout money for his company, GE Capital. See, no disclosure. But you see, what we do in talk radio is fill in the gaps. That's our job. We fill in the gaps, the missing links in the media. But how much can you take? I ask myself, the average person out there listening to me in a car, on a plane, I don't know where they're at, a car, home, how much information can you take in your busy day? You're struggling or you're not struggling. You're making money, you're worried if you're going to keep it. You're making money, you're worried if you're going to be taxed to death, whatever. You think I don't understand it? I understand it very well. I have the same worries. The years I didn't make, I worried about making it. Now the years I make, I'm worried about keeping it. All right, so it's always worry. There's always financial worries, one or the other. You know, of the making of many worries, there is no end. I'll modify the Bible a little. Money is a perennial problem. Even when you have it, it's trouble. When you have some money, you worry about losing it. You have some money, you worry about a Marxist government taking it from you. You know, so there's always an association worried about things of this nature. That's the nature of the human being in the civilized world. So there's nothing new under the sun in that regard. That's all. There's no point to what I'm saying to you. But I'd like to know how anyone can explain to me how spending trillions of dollars will avoid a mini depression, says the General Electric chief Immelt, when he's going to receive some of the money through his GE Capital, while the CEO of a group that gets no money, who's successful, says we don't have to do it right away. We better do it slower and with less money. Who are you going to believe? The chief of General Electric who's getting some of the bailout money, or the chief of another group that is a successful businessman who's getting none of the money? Tell me who you're going to believe. Who are you going to believe? Brock in New York, WR, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I don't believe anybody, but I got a rhetorical answer to your question, which would be that the idea is that people need to consume, and supposedly the economy expands. Remember after 9/11, Rudy Giuliani said, go out, have some dinner, go out and buy something. So they mistakenly believe that somehow this will expand the economy. That's what they say, but this is not necessarily the case.
Well, that the idea was trickle-down prosperity, but as I defined it during the campaign, what Obama is bringing to America is trickle-up poverty. I defined that term. I gave it to John McCain to run with it. He could have won the debate by saying, Obama, your policies have been tried before. They're, if he didn't want to use the Marxist word, he was afraid of it, McCain, because he was afraid of telling the truth. Your policies are nothing but trickle-up poverty. Would have been the end of the election.
Well, I have
But that's what we're seeing here. This is trickle-up poverty.
Another question for you, though.
Yes.
You said that this country was founded on Christian principles, ultimately based on Judaic principles. Now, as far as I know, in the New Testament, it says if you get hit, you should turn the other cheek. And also Jesus is quoted as saying, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. So I don't know where you got the idea that this country was founded on such principles.
Well, because that's because you don't understand turn the other cheek. I have had professors of divinity, professors of theology, Christian experts discuss this in great detail. It doesn't mean you perennially turn the other cheek. In other words, otherwise you wind up dead. You wind up a piece of chopped meat.
The thing with the camel.
Where does the Bible say you shouldn't protect yourself? Can you find it anywhere, Brock?
A camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Then a
right, I read that last week on the show. I've quoted it many times. Look what it got Jesus.
Question, Michael.
I mean, look what it got him, that statement. Got him very far. Yeah, what else?
The idea supposedly it was founded on these principles. I have one last question for you.
Yes, but wait a minute. Just because a nation is founded on principles doesn't mean it follows a chapter and verse every second of the day. That was their faith. It doesn't mean it was their action. I mean, understand there's a little difference between faith and action, or faith and daily living. You understand that? You could be a great believer in principles and believe in God and still recognize that you have to do certain things to survive.
Most nations abandon their principles when it becomes convenient for them to do so. That's obvious.
I understand that. I understand all of that. Nothing's in the... We don't live in a petri dish.
Where is the Marxism? Marxism is expropriation of private property. Marxism is nationalization of industry.
Hold. Appropriation of private property. What would you call taking the taxpayers' money and spending it on boondoggles? Is that not appropriating property? Money is property, Brock.
Of course. You said yourself.
Well, don't go over it like I didn't say anything. I did answer your question. Of course he's not seizing my farm, so to speak. But he's seizing my income. That's why I'm opposed to high taxation. That, to me, is Marxism to begin with. You know, this graduated income tax is utterly unfair. Why should I be rewarded in the negative for earning more money? Tell me how that works.
Money goes to Goldman Sachs and the automakers, Michael. Where is the socialism?
Whoa. Now you're changing the argument. You just changed the discussion. You're telling me Goldman Sachs is a classic capitalist organization, Brock?
Yes, of course. It is not
a capitalist organization by any means. The Goldman Sachs that you are looking at is a new form of capitalism. It is a fascist capitalism. It has seized all reins of power by putting their own men into the treasury and, in a way, in reverse engineering, taking the treasury upon itself as though it owns it. Goldman Sachs is not a traditional capitalist enterprise in the sense of laissez-faire capitalism. It is something new entirely. This is fascist capitalism. They have, in essence, perverted the word capitalism itself.
The big three automakers.
What's the question about them?
They're also receiving money. The money is being redistributed from the middle class to the big three automakers to corporate America. Where's the socialism, Michael?
Where's the socialism? Again, they're appropriating the property of the middle class. If the middle class were asked, do you want to bail out Chrysler, for example, which is, by the way, owned by a private equity group, not by a corporation in the sense that you are talking about. It's money going into the hands of, again, capitalist fascists who are seizing it from the middle class. This is a very unique situation here, Brock. Chrysler is owned by a private equity group. They're taking the money from the people. They're appropriating the private property of the people and giving it to a private equity firm. It's the same with Goldman Sachs, who took the money from the Treasury into the hands of the private sector, meaning their own pockets. That's appropriation.
Okay. Marx also said that religion is the opiate of the masses. So where is the connection? Anybody who believes in any religion, by definition, cannot be a Marxist.
So what is your point?
My point is that Obama, if he's a Christian or a Muslim or whatever he is, he cannot be a Marxist because he claims, at least, or you're saying that he's just playing
well,
that
wait
game.
A minute, Brooke, wait. You think that the driving force in Obama's life is religious, or do you think it's political?
No, it's political, obviously.
All right. Well, let's take it a step at a time. We're having a reasonable discussion. We're not fighting. We're not arguing. You think that he's any different than Bill Clinton, who walked around with a staged Bible that was oversized with a big cross on it?
No, of course not.
All right, fine. So it's a show Bible. It's a show religion, whatever it may be. I don't think there's much there. I think he's a nakedly aggressive politician like all of them. So I think it's an inappropriate argument because I don't know if there's any religion there. I think it's all phony. That's my personal belief.
Main point, Michael, is what I've been trying to say the whole time, and I'll say it explicitly and blatantly, okay? There is no Marxist revolution in this country, you understand? Because the capitalist class in this country will not allow such a revolution. If Obama tries to do even a fraction of what you claim he's going to do, they will dig up his coke dealer or somebody from the past. Do you understand what I'm saying? They will discredit him in one way or another. He will.
But I think you're wrong. I think you're not reading the tea leaves correctly. Let us go back to the beginning. You're a man who is apparently knowledgeable. Do you know what Fabian socialism is?
I've heard the expression, but I can't say that I know what it is exactly.
All right, fine. At least you're willing to say that. Let me explain what it is. The Fabian socialists realized that you cannot bring about a socialist revolution through violence. It doesn't work. It backfires. You have to do it by increment and through peaceful means. And you have to do it incrementally and slowly. I did not say that he is a Marxist. I said these are neo-Marxists. That was my exact definition of the Obama regime. And they're going slowly. This is the infancy of the neo-Marxist Obama regime. Of course they're not going to run out and nakedly seize private property and close the churches the way the Bolsheviks did in the Soviet Union in 1917. That's not the way it works. They do it by degree and slowly. That's the point I'm making. But if you analyze what he's actually doing, we have a mini-fascist state going on here. Let's start with his first executive order. He, by decree, closes Guantanamo Bay. Why did he do that? What was the meaning of doing that? Who was he satisfying? The far left, the MoveOn.org, the zany crazy left that helped put him in power. Do they actually know why they're closing it? They came up with the big lie that there was torture going on there. There was no torture going on there. They took some of the most dangerous people on earth and they put them on the hellhole of Cuba. And they did so to protect the American people. That's why. But why did Obama, his first act, first executive order, close Gitmo? Now, is that the act of a Democratic president?
Why not close it? What's the difference?
Well, now you're starting to get rhetorical with me. What do you mean, why not close it? Was this voted upon? Did the Senate debate the merits or the dismerits of closing the Guantanamo? Were they discussed so the American people can listen to this? Like, if you close it, where do the prisoners go? No, it was done by decree. That's fascism.
Anything in this country ever been discussed with the American people before?
Well, wait a minute. Something as significant as closing Gitmo and saying it's closed, that we feel better now, but they don't know what to do with the prisoners. Let's go to the second or third executive order. Again, fascism. Why did Obama declare that they should get a trial in America when they were given military trials, which, by the way, had been established in the 1940s by the socialist president, FDR, as I've described in great details, when the Americans caught espionage, German agents in America were landed by submarine off the coast of Long Island, New Jersey. They were captured and tried by military tribunals. They were given the same exact treatment, except when they were found guilty, six or seven of them were shot. They were not afforded trials, and they were not given constitutional protections. That was under FDR, a socialist president. Why would Obama grant them constitutional rights?
I have no idea. Except to cater to...
You have no idea. Again, this is the act of a despot who just does it by decree. There was no discussion. There was virtually no discussion. The radical left wanted them to have a trial. Why? Why should they be given a civil trial? Why?
There is no radical left in this country. This is an illusion that is created by people like you.
Oh, come on. Now you're pulling my leg. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is not a part of the radical left?
There is no left wing in this country, Michael.
It's Brock, now I know you're just trying to discredit me, but you're not doing a very good job. There's no radical left in this country.
Okay. Not in
Where is there a radical left, Brock?
There used to be a radical left in Western Europe in the 1970s and 80s known as terrorist groups, and they were terrorists.
Oh, now you're talking about the Red Brigades, right?
I'm talking about the Red Army faction.
You're talking about the Biedermannhof gang?
Exactly.
All right. So you're saying there's no overt terrorism from the far left. That is because they have infiltrated the government to such an extent that they run the country. They don't have to kidnap industrialists. All they have to do is hijack industry. There's no need to kidnap industrialists and put them in a trunk and demand ransom or change in policy. They just take over the whole industry through nationalization, which is what Obama's doing here.
Do you believe the New York Times is the radical left, Michael?
Do I believe it's the radical left? I think it's the stupid, the foolish left.
Have you looked at
that? I think Pinchy Sulzberger is just a fool, not a leftist. I don't think he knows how to run a newspaper.
You looked at who places advertisements in the New York Times, Michael?
Yeah, anybody who has money and wants to sell it to foolish Upper East Side liberals.
Exactly. And if...
Whatever they want to sell to an Upper East Side liberal, they put in the New York Times. So the Schmendricks walking around on West 82nd Street can think that they're cool.
Whatever, you're right about that. I'm not going to argue with that. But if the New York Times was a radical left newspaper, those corporations would pull their advertising immediately. The New York Times is there to give people...
Let's slow down. I don't think you understand what I'm saying. We have an infancy in this country of neo-Marxism. It is a crawling neo-Marxism. It is in diapers. Let's take a trajectory together of what Obama is doing thus far and take the trajectory of these acts. And let's go ahead together a year, two, three, or four. You're telling me that's not a left-wing trajectory?
Should I tell you what a left-wing trajectory is?
Yes, hold on. I want to hear it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We go back to the caller, Brock, who's going to tell us what liberalism really is, and we only have 2 minutes. I got to tell you something. There are cretins out there like Bill Press, who failed in radio, who is saying we need to have the Fairness Doctrine brought back. And I want to say this. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. End of story. The government cannot abridge the freedom of the press in the sense of abridging my right to speak. Now let's go back to Brock. Brock, go ahead, please.
Yeah, first of all, I disagree 100% with any effort to get you off the air, even though I disagree with most of the things that you say. True left-wing socialism would be complete nationalization of the energy and automotive industries, universal healthcare.
Whoa. Wait a minute. My friend. Unfortunately, you just stepped into your own snare. The government, in bailing out the auto industry, has nationalized the auto business. You know that, and I know that.
Nationalized the auto industry.
What do you mean they haven't?
They have.
They're going to be. Didn't they just dictate the salaries on Wall Street? What is that considered? Don't you consider that government intervention in the financial markets?
Who owns the shares, Michael?
Well, you see, now you're moving and you're changing the argument, Brock. I think you lost that one.
All right. Whatever. We disagree. But let me just ask you one thing. I think in the future it would be nice if you'd be a little bit nicer to the people that disagree with you on this program.
Brock, was I not nice to you?
No, I'm not talking about me, Michael. I'm talking about other people. If somebody calls up, he's black, you say he's on Medicaid. Somebody calls up, he has a...
No. Now you're talking about a guy who sounds like somebody else. That's not me at all, Brock.
I've heard
in
you
In fact, you're such a nice guy that I want you to go away, not go away mad, as my father would say in his little store. Just go away, don't go away mad. Brock, I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. You could do what you want with it. Throw it out the window, read it. Use it for toilet paper, but it's coming to you. If you'll stay on the line, we'll get you your address. Tomorrow in the Savage Nation, I'm going to talk about the primitive Aryans and these ancient Nordic peoples with blue eyes and blonde hair and how they treated their dead as opposed to the brunette people.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Here's what we've been talking about today. The strange case of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I note with interest that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the most extreme Marxist revolutionary in the Supreme Court, has gone in for cancer surgery. We wish her a full and speedy recovery, but we wonder what might transpire should she meet her final reward in the sky. Would Obama appear at a funeral wearing a yarmulke? Or would he calculate that this might offend the Muslim world? Of course he would have to appear, and would therefore necessarily wear a yarmulke, in which case he would need to attend the Muslim funeral almost immediately thereafter so as not to offend the all-important Muslim world. But it would have to be an important Muslim, not an ordinary unknown Muslim, whose funeral he attends. Would the neo-Marxists go so far as to order an important Muslim to seek the 72 virgins immediately? To permit the maximum leader to appear at his funeral in full Muslim garb? Only time will tell. This is Hans Christian Savage signing off. The Queen of Diamonds is another topic we discussed. Did anyone see the bizarre spectacle of the Queen of Diamonds, Dianne Feinstein, dominating the Panetta hearings today?
It's very safe and fair for me to say that he has a reputation for intelligence and integrity. And that certainly has been my personal experience.
Why is she allowed to determine who is the head of the CIA when her husband, Richard Blum, is a known business partner of the Chinese government? What drives a power-hungry Mandarin like Feinstein, and how does she get away with it, we asked. We talked about the Port of Los Angeles obtaining a mobile X-ray device from a Chinese company a few months back. It was an outrage. The Chinese company underbid all others. There was possible reverse engineering for them to make the device, security issues, and many other things we worried about. Thankfully, the people at the Port of L.A. have listened to the outcry, and they are reportedly getting ready to cancel the contract. Joining us now is Jacob Goodwin, the editor-in-chief of Government Security News and GSNmagazine.com, to report on this. Just as he did with the original story, Jacob Goodwin, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much. Always nice to talk to you.
Remind us about the background of this story on the X-ray equipment.
3 or 4 months ago, our publication became aware of the fact that the Port of Los Angeles had decided to purchase a big fancy mobile X-ray screening vehicle that they were going to use at the port to screen trucks and vehicles coming into the port. And they had run a competitive procurement, and they decided about a year ago that they were going to buy a mobile X-ray screening machine that had been built in the People's Republic of China. That was the stunning news. The next piece of news was that not only were they going to buy it for approximately $1.8 million, which was the cheapest bid of three different competitors, so they did take the low bid, but the other interesting news was that the Port of Los Angeles was planning to receive from the federal government in what's called a port security grant from the Department of Homeland Security, they were going to receive almost all of that money. About $1.7 million was going to be reimbursed to the Port of Los Angeles by the federal government. And so essentially you had this unusual situation where a U.S. port was buying equipment that had been built in the People's Republic of China, and it was going to be paid for with federal dollars coming from DHS. We reported that, I believe it was October of 2008, And immediately a number of people in the media, and I believe you, Michael, were one of the first people to jump on this. People were expressing a variety of forms of outrage. Some people objected to the fact that they were just turning to a manufacturer in the People's Republic of China. Other people were objecting to the fact that U.S. tax dollars were being given to pay for this. Other people were concerned that U.S. national security interests might be compromised by the purchase, because, in fact, these X-ray machines are capable of taking thousands of images, storing thousands of images of what's entering and leaving the port of Los Angeles, and they have the ability to transmit those images electronically, digitally, over the Internet, anywhere they want, including, theoretically, back to the People's Republic of China. There are those who thought it was not a good idea to have Chinese equipment sitting in the port of Los Angeles that effectively could take images of everything that came into and out of this particular screening machine and send it back to China. Other people objected to the fact that the company that actually built the equipment is a company called Nuketech Limited in China, based in Beijing. The president of that company just so happens to be the son of the president of China, of the president of the People's Republic of China. So there was this uncomfortable feeling that in competing with a U.S. company, and there was a British company involved for the original contract, that somehow the Chinese might be subsidizing this company and allowing it to underbid, winning the bid in Los Angeles. Of course, other people objected to the fact that merely giving the contract to the Chinese was going to lose jobs here at home. The people who would normally be building this machine in the United States or perhaps in the UK, instead those jobs would be exported to China. So there were all sorts of reasons why people objected to this, and it got a lot of attention in the media, and it got a lot of attention in Capitol Hill in Congress.
Well, who spoke out against this deal in Congress?
At the time, a congressman who represents the district in Los Angeles where the port is, a fellow named Dana Rohrabacher, he came out and called for the contract to be reviewed or even canceled. To make a long story short, about 3 or 4 months later, this was in October, we broke the story. 2 days ago, we learned that, in fact, the Port of Los Angeles is now strongly considering canceling the contract. And tomorrow night, what's called the Board of Harbor Commissioners, which are the people who make the decisions for the Port of Los Angeles, they have been given a recommendation by their own staff, particularly the Homeland Security Division at the port, is now recommending that the contract be canceled. I've seen the staff memorandum that was sent to the Board of Harbor Commissioners outlining in detail why this contract should be canceled, and we reported on it extensively in our publication, Government Security News. We reported the details, and interestingly enough, in that memorandum to the board, they do not acknowledge or recognize the political turmoil that the contract caused and all the hubbub and stir that it caused. They basically argued that the contract should be canceled because the company that they awarded the contract to, which is a small firm based in Southern California that acts as the broker on behalf of Nuketech. That little firm is called Dooley Research. They basically argued that Dooley Research hasn't performed many of the technical requirements of the contract, and so they should just be ruled in default of the contract, and it should be canceled. The board is meeting Thursday night, and I fully anticipate that the board will accept the recommendation of its staff and will cancel the contract. To me, it's interesting for the following reason. I mean, one, from our point of view, from our magazine, we always take pride in not only reporting something accurately, but then actually seeing something happen as a result of our straightforward reporting. Usually doesn't happen that way in journalism, as you well know, Michael. But in this case, we reported the story straight in October, and we're very happy to see that somebody paid attention. It caused a little bit of a controversy, and the powers that be at the Port of Los Angeles seem to have listened and have now turned around and are going to decide tomorrow night to cancel the contract.
What kind of reaction?
Angeles, who, as I say, weren't too keen on acknowledging the controversy that they were in the midst of. I also reached the president of Dooley Research. This is the small firm that acts as the broker for the Chinese company Nuketech, and he was very unhappy with me, frankly. I mean, I reached him. He said he was very busy. He acknowledged that no decision has been made yet, which I think is accurate, but he was scrambling around trying to respond to a variety of the technical requirements that they were saying he's failed to accomplish. And so he was under pressure to try to save his contract, and he said to me, your publication caused a lot of anger and kicked up a lot of fuss. So to a certain extent, I think he was holding us responsible for the problems that he now finds himself in.
What kind of problems are they having with this vehicle?
You know, just to rattle off a couple of them, because it does get kind of tedious. They pointed out that the vehicle itself was going to be outfitted in China and then sent over to Los Angeles. The vehicle itself is not legally allowed to be imported into the United States because it's not what they call a conforming motor vehicle. So it actually isn't capable of being legally driven in the state of California. They don't meet various European standards for greenhouse gases. They don't meet various quality control standards. They didn't provide documentation or what's called operational checklists in the English language. The generator for the X-ray unit failed. Various radiation dosimeters failed, and a variety of other things. Now, one might ask the question, did the port and the technical folks at the Port of Los Angeles just have to cook up a list of technical deficiencies in order to justify backing out of this contract? The answer probably is yes to some extent. I personally imagine that the vendor, in this case Dooley Research, did fall short in a number of areas, but the probable reason for the port to decide to pull out of the contract is all of the heat that they were under, and that was considerable. I noted, by the way, that the congressman who originally came out and called for the contract to be canceled, Dana Rohrabacher of California, has since come out and thanked the port for coming to its senses, and et cetera. So a lot of people who are upset when they see the People's Republic of China acting in such a sensitive way in the field of U.S. national security, I think have been relieved by the way these events have turned out.
Where does it go from here?
What they're now telling me is essentially, listen, we're going to step back. We're going to catch our breath. We're going to figure out, should we find another way to investigate the trucks and vehicles that are entering the port without buying new equipment, or should we come back with another procurement and perhaps open it up to new competition once again? At this stage, they don't seem to know. I predict, simply because I think they were burned by the way they handled this, that you won't see another procurement for a while. There were two other companies, one British, one U.S., that were originally bidding on it. One of the companies was called Rapiscan, which is a company based not far from the port in California. They bid a higher price. And another company called Smith's Detection, which has a U.S. arm but is essentially a British-based company. I know that both Smith's Detection and Rapiscan would like to compete and would like to participate and sell their vehicles to the port for the same purpose. But my own prediction is not based on anything but knowledge of how these things happen. My own prediction is it'll be a while before the procurement happens. I think they'll let the dust settle, let the controversy abate before they do the next move. I think it's a very significant move. It was not a good time for the Port of Los Angeles to make a decision that essentially was exporting jobs to some country. It was a bad time to see more jobs be exported out to China. And I think the fact that this turned around and the jobs won't be exported to China and might ultimately be, the contract might be relet and it might end up going to a company here in the United States, I think is a good sign for the United States getting its act together and acting in its own self-interest. It shook out the right way, and, I'm pleased at the way it shook out. I think it was intelligent, and the port came to its senses correctly.
Jacob Goodwin, thanks for keeping up on this, and thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Just days after surgery, Ginsburg was out speaking to the public.
I am still mending, but I have progressed steadily.
Fighting then, as she has throughout her career, for gender equality.
I had the great good fortune to be alive and a lawyer in the late 1960s when, for the very first time in the history of this country, it became possible to urge before courts successfully that society would benefit enormously if women were regarded as people equal in stature to men.
Oh, little girl of mine.
This morning we heard reports that far-leftist, neo-Marxist Supreme Court Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg is entering the hospital for treatment of pancreatic cancer. Now, of course, we've known that she has had pancreatic cancer for some time. The reason that this is coming out now is because Obama has the opportunity to appoint someone even further to the left than she, should she have to step down. Now, there are some out there who will say that this appointment won't matter that much should it become necessary. There's some who will say that Obama, a liberal, would just appoint another liberal if the leftist Bader Ginsburg were to step down. But it is far more dangerous than this, because the country has undergone a paradigm shift. We have been pushed so far to the left by the liberal media that whoever Obama appoints will be far to the left of even the socialist Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You see, the fact is, in the United States today, there is no Republican Party. Those who call themselves Republicans are, in fact, liberal Democrats. And those who call themselves Democrats are, in fact, socialists. This is how far left we have moved. And here is what is even more frightening. The two leftist Republicans, John McCain and Orrin Hatch, who helped push through Ruth Bader Ginsburg years and years ago when she was first nominated by Bill Clinton, are still in the Senate and will be in a position to support her successor should she step down. So in other words, it's not the socialists we have to be afraid of, the ones that call themselves Democrats. It's the real Democrats, the ones that call themselves Republicans, that we need to fear, because these Republicans in name only, along with the rest of the country, have been moved so far to the left that they don't know where they stand. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the radical, criticized the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Quote, "The Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, while ostensibly providing separate but equal benefits to both sexes, perpetuate stereotyped sex roles to the extent that they carry out congressionally mandated purposes," close quote. Right out of communist China. She urged co-ed prisons. Sex-segregated adult or juvenile institutions are obviously separate and in a variety of ways unequal. If the grand design of such institutions is to prepare inmates for return to the community as persons equipped to benefit from and contribute to civil society, then perpetuation of single-sex institutions should be rejected. That's her. She wanted co-ed prisons. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who they're now parading forth as some sickly old woman, had recommended legislative changes that would reduce the age of consent for statutory rape under federal law from 16 to 12, reducing the age of consent to 12 years of age, requiring taxpayer funding for abortion. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, practicing limousine radical. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
For years during the reign of George W. Bush, the liberal U.S. media would talk about nothing, it seemed, except neoconservatives. The neoconservatives had done this. The neoconservatives had done that. The neocons took us to war. The neocons were taking away our rights. The neocons had taken over the country. But more dangerous than the wildest liberal fantasy of neoconservative boogeymen is the real threat of neo-Marxist liberals. Barack Obama is a case in point. Marxists always try to build a stronger centralized government, gather more power on a federal level, make government bigger. They want to centralize, nationalize, and socialize. That's why you've heard Democratic members of Congress talk about nationalizing the oil industry. That's why you've heard Barack Obama talk about nationalizing the healthcare system. That's why Barack Obama is now telling U.S. companies how much they can pay their employees. A salary cap is the first step on the way to Soviet-style price controls. It's something that Karl Marx would have dearly loved to see. You see, Karl Marx, if you remember your history, was the founder of the Communist Party. He wanted to hand the means of production, the manufacturing base of the country, over to what he called the proletariat or the working people. But people turned out to be a euphemism for the central government, and Marx's ideas ended in the deaths of 100 million people throughout the 20th century. What will the end of neo-Marxist liberalism be? We don't know. But with Barack Obama having issued more executive orders in his first 2 weeks than any other president in recent history, and with Nancy Pelosi Mussolini screaming that the federal government needs the power to stimulate the economy or it'll collapse, it looks like the neo-Marxist liberals are about to get their way. G.W. Bush may have started the process of socializing America and its economy, but Barack Hussein Obama has bigger plans than G.W. and his neocons could have ever imagined. We could use a few neocons these days, at least the ones who haven't already signed on to Obama's express train to Marxism. Obama's campaign consisted of many promises. He promised everything to everybody. He promised to open up to the world and improve our world image. He said he would find middle ground for the country to come together instead of pushing us farther apart. Joining us today is Grace Vuto from the Washington Times with a report on some of these promises already broken.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. One of the things that we have recognized immediately is that President Obama has already betrayed two of his campaign promises. He said over and over again throughout the campaign trail that he was going to unite us, not divide us. And he also said that he was going to search for ways to reduce the number of abortions. No sooner was he sworn into office, 3 days later, he violated both of those campaign pledges. How did he do that? On January 23, he basically repealed the ban on U.S. funding for foreign family planning aid groups that offer abortion services. This really means that American tax dollars can now be used to provide abortions around the world. What does that really mean? America is back in business as Dr. Death to millions of the world's babies. Now, Democrats and Republicans have been fighting over this for 20 years. Ronald Reagan first introduced the ban in 1984. Then Bill Clinton overturned it in 1993. George Bush reinstated it in 2001. And Mr. Obama has wasted no time whatsoever in repealing the ban. What he has basically said with this action is that the culture war is on. He is not going to be an ally by any way, shape, or form to the pro-life community. He is basically casting his lot with the pro-choicers. Quite contrary to much of what he said, during the campaign trail, he was able to even win 54% of the Catholic vote, many of whom were staunchly pro-life, and who believed somehow that, you know, maybe this president was going to find some kind of middle ground between the pro-choicers and the pro-lifers. Not so, not so. By repealing this ban, what Obama has done is he is going to allow for millions of dollars in funds to be given to NGOs around the world. Just to give you a sense of how dramatic and how real this measure is, consider this statistic. The International Planned Parenthood Federation said that in the last 8 years, $100 million in U.S. aid was lost to its affiliates in 100 countries. So that means that when George Bush had instituted this ban, it basically starved Planned Parenthood International of $100 million. So by Obama lifting the ban, how many millions of American tax dollars are going to go now to fund the killing of babies around the world? Where is the outrage, I'm wondering? Where is the outrage among all of the pro-life, pro-Obama supporters who said throughout the campaign that Obama was going to be a defender of life? I mean, consider somebody like longtime Catholic and Republican legal scholar Douglas Kimiek. He endorsed Obama and he said, you know, don't worry, this guy, he's going to help us. He's an ally of sorts. He has some kind of Christian morals and he's going to be able to find some kind of middle ground. Instead, what we see from President Obama is that he is a fanatic on the issue of pro-choice. This is not going down well amongst people like Pope Benedict XVI. He didn't mince his words. He understood exactly what the president's measure meant. He immediately said that it was a very, very disappointing action. And a top official close to Pope Benedict said that this is actually an act of arrogance by those who, having power, think they can decide between life and death. What does this tell us? It tells us that Barack Obama is not the president of hope and change. He's not the president that's going to lead us towards a kinder, more gentler, more unified America. Instead, one of his first acts of office was to immediately open up these wounds in the body politic between pro-choicers and pro-lifers. What President Obama really is nothing more than a wolf in sheep's clothing. I'd also wanted to consider another element of this debate. We wrote an editorial called Forced to Abort. And one of the things that I think has been very much underreported in the media is how many women are actually, even in America, that is, they are coerced to abort fetuses by either their husbands or parents or other authority figures. One of the issues here is that the very word choice has been used by pro-choicers as a means of trying to present this legalized abortion as something that is actually very helpful to women. But in fact, once abortion is legal, there's another dimension to all this. That is that in many cases, women can be coerced or intimidated to abort their fetuses, even when they don't want to. There's an individual out there by the name of David Reardon. He leads the Elliott Institute. He's put together a fantastic report called Forced Abortion in America. And he really chronicles how many women have complained that they have been bullied into an abortion that they really, really didn't want to undergo. 45% of men interviewed at abortion clinics said that they urged abortion to the women that they had brought there, including 37% of married men. What we know now is that there are many women who are often threatened by their male companions who take them to their abortion appointment. And this has been verified and by eyewitness accounts at abortion clinics, even by security guards. Pressure to abort can consist of a whole range of actions, including intimidation, blackmail, even violence. An amazing 64% of American women say that they were intensely pressured to abort their fetus, according to a report published in the Medical Science Monitor. So, as we go forward in this new administration, we have to be extremely vigilant, raising these issues. What is Barack Obama doing to expand abortion internationally? What is he doing to protect women from issues like coerced abortion? And what can we do to continue to defend the life of the unborn? What we see by the president's first action that is that he has laid down the gauntlet. He will not defend life. So it is up to all the pro-lifers to fight every day to help women. So we have to be very vigilant in this fight, and I encourage all Americans to be unrelenting. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks for the report, Grace. It's important that we see the truth and not just old campaign promises. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
With the Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad, threatening to wipe Israel off the map, and his continuous defiance of the West with his nuclear development, it is clear that Iran is one of the biggest issues that our newly minted president has to deal with. Obama the Magnificent said he wants to open up talks with the little man from Iran. How did Iran react? They continue their nuclear ambitions and now have reportedly launched a satellite. Joining us today is Ken Timmerman with Newsmax.com, who has been watching this whole situation. Ken, welcome back to the Savage Nation. How important was this rocket launch by Iran?
Well, Michael, this satellite launch by Iran is certainly serious, but it's not the end of the world. The Iranians have frequently bluffed about their technological capabilities, and I think there's an element of bluff in what they've just done here. They've launched a 44-pound satellite, essentially a flying grapefruit with a radio beacon on top. It is not a missile. It is not an intelligent satellite. It is not a satellite capable of inflicting any damage or harm on the United States in any way whatsoever. However, what is very important is the intent that it shows. It shows that the Iranian regime is eager to develop a capability, first of all, to stage missiles, and I'll explain what that means in a second. It also means that they want to be able to develop longer-range missiles, which is immediately a threat to the United States and to Europe. Now, staging is important because if they cannot put to stack missiles on top of each other. In other words, to have a to have missiles stage and separate as they're rising into the atmosphere. They cannot launch a warhead against the United States or against targets that are further away. Today, their Shahab 3 missiles are limited to a range of somewhere between 1,000 to 1,200 miles. This allows them to reach Israel, but it doesn't allow them to go any further than that. And those missiles are basically the limit of what you can do with a single-stage missile. To get any further than that, to be able to threaten Europe, to be able to threaten the United States, to be able to threaten Egypt, for example, and let's not forget the Iranians have got a pretty bad relationship with Egypt, they have to be able to stage the missiles. So what we did see with this satellite launch is that they succeeded in staging and breaking apart successfully a two-stage missile to launch this small satellite.
What was the world's reaction to the Iranian rocket launch?
The reaction was almost immediate, Michael. Hillary Clinton, now Secretary of State, was meeting with her British counterpart, David Miliband, in Washington. And, they came out pretty strongly condemning what the Iranians were doing. Hillary herself said that this gave the Iranians an opportunity to show that they were serious about being a member of the international community and cooperating with the United States. She repeated what Barack Obama had said about them unclenching their fist. But the professionals in the department were more clear about what this meant. You had the State Department spokesman, Robert Wood, who said that this could possibly lead to the development of ballistic missiles, and it was a development of great concern. At the White House, Robert Gibbs, who's the spokesman there, said, this action does not convince us, quote, that Iran is acting responsibly to advance stability or security in the region. In France, a spokesman for the French Foreign Ministry said that the French were very concerned about the launch. And he went on, quote, we can't help but link this to the very serious concerns about the development of military nuclear capability. I think that's really the most important thing to underline here, Michael, is that there is a direct linkage between the development of long-range missiles and Iran's military nuclear program. It's something that the International Atomic Energy Agency has been worried about. They have found documents in Iran that suggest a direct linkage between the missile programs and the nuclear weapons program. Obviously, if you're going to be designing a reentry vehicle for a missile of a size to carry a nuclear weapon, then you have to have the nuclear weapon to put inside. And that is the kind of thing that the IAEA has found in Iran.
Even the New York Times is getting excited about this?
Well, yeah, the New York Times said it was a shot across the bow of President Obama. Now, this gets very interesting. When you've got the New York Times criticizing the Iranian regime and saying it poses their actions pose a challenge to the United States president, then I think we should all take pause and be very concerned. Not because the New York Times is a credible news organization, but because they are a liberal news organization that supports President Obama and wants to avoid bad news that could embarrass the administration. Look, President Obama has said that he intends to launch a diplomatic initiative towards the Iranian regime. Just today, I was on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., talking to members of Congress and experts who were discussing the various ways that the administration is going to reach out to Iran. But this is a venture that is fraught, Michael, with challenges, with difficulties, and with dangers. The Iranian regime, look, I know the Iranians very well. They have no real interest in negotiating with us, but they do have a great interest in getting concessions from the United States for free. And what they're seeing here is that we are negotiating with ourselves in public. We are essentially showing our hand. We're telling them how far we're willing to go. We're telling them what we want to get from them, and we're telling them the price that we're willing to pay for that. And the Iranians can basically just sit back and watch us negotiate with themselves while they figure out how they're going to counter us. I don't expect that President Obama's negotiations are going to lead to anything positive, but what worries me the most is the time that they will consume. I heard, for example, a former State Department ambassador today claim that they had to launch these negotiations because the Bush administration wouldn't talk to Iran. But We've been talking to Iran nonstop for the past 6 years. We've been talking to them in Iraq through the U.S. Embassy there, in Baghdad, Ryan Crocker, our ambassador. The former ambassador in Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad, was talking to them in 2002, 2003. We've had lots and lots of security discussions with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they've gotten us exactly nowhere. The European Union has been talking to them for 5 years, trying to get them to slow down their nuclear program, and gotten nowhere. In the meantime, what the Iranians do, they take that talk to the bank, and they continue to enrich uranium to acquire the materials, the sophistication, the know-how to be able to break out and build a nuclear weapon on a very short notice should they decide to do so. And that is really the risk that we're looking at. So what we've got with a satellite launch, we've got a new capability the Iranians are trying to demonstrate, which is long-range ballistic missiles, coupled to a nuclear program which is well-advanced and many experts believe could give the Iranians enough weapons-grade material within 6 months to a year should they wish to acquire it. So that's really what we're looking at. That's the challenge, I think, for the Obama administration. And I am not convinced at all, as I listen to the president and I listen to Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, and other of the new administration officials, I am not at all convinced that they are up to the task, that they understand the threat, and they know how to counter it.
Thanks for the report, Ken. I'm not convinced either that the Obama administration is up to this important challenge. Well, here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the neo-Marxist on the U.S. Supreme Court, has gone in for pancreatic cancer surgery. We wish her well, but who can she be replaced with but another neo-Marxist and a woman at that? God, how many Hillarys can Obama find? Iran says U.S. must accept their nuclear program. Isn't that interesting? L.A. to cancel Chinese X-ray contract, thanks to the Savage Nation. And if you missed it, Traitor McCain, the man who missed the presidency by a few million votes, has introduced an amendment to kill the Buy American clause. He said he's going to strip the Buy American provision in the U.S. pork barrel stimulus bill. Thank you, John. We knew who you were all along. 11 ex-Gitmo prisoners, the darlings of the left, who was sent to a rehab center in Saudi Arabia, have fled the rehab center and are thought to have fled the country entirely, joining terrorist groups elsewhere. Thank you, liberal idiots. And here's one other story you don't want to miss. Madman Bill Gates of Microsoft released a jar full of mosquitoes on his guests at a speech to show them what the poor of the world put up with. My friends, liberalism is a serious mental disorder that is getting worse. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.